So, if you stand like 2 inches away from a massive mosaic, all you're going to see is chaos. I mean, you see a jagged red tile here, maybe a random blue one there.
Right, makes zero sense.
Exactly. It makes no sense, and predicting where the next piece will go feels, completely impossible. But if you just take 10 steps back,
The chaos just vanishes.
it vanishes. Suddenly, it's a perfect repeating geometric pattern. You can point exactly to where the next red tile belongs because, well, it was always a cycle. You were just standing too close to see it.
Yeah, that's such a great visual. And today on our deep dive, we are taking those 10 steps back to look at this massive, totally predictable mosaic of human behavior.
And we're doing that by examining a very specific operational manual today. We are pulling directly from Chapter 3 of Jack Spirko's book, Laws of Life, Book 1, Ditch the System, Design Your Life.
Right, and this specific chapter is titled Everything is a Cycle. If you want to know what is coming next, just look at what happened before.
Which is quite the title, but it really sets the stage. So look, if you are listening to this right now, our mission today is to basically equip you with the mental tools to step outside the herd, to spot these cycles before they crush you and protect your wealth and, maybe more importantly, your unrecoverable time.
Yeah, time is the big one.
For sure. And to do that, I'm bringing my perspective as a behavioral economist. My daily work revolves around analyzing crowd behavior, market psychology, and the underlying neurobiology of how humans make decisions when they're just flooded with emotion.
And I'm filtering this chapter through my lens as a history teacher and a media literacy coach, because my focus is entirely on helping students spot these invisible, repeated social, political, and cultural frameworks that just constantly loop through our authority, right?
Completely unnoticed by the general public.
Exactly, completely unnoticed. So let's just jump right into, I think, the deepest flaw in how we're taught to view the past. Because, as an educator, you know, that old cliche, right? The one printed on every middle school classroom wall.
Oh, yeah. We study history to avoid the mistakes of the past.
Yeah, that one. I literally look at that poster every single day.
Yeah.
And, well, as the author rightly points out, it's essentially a fairy tale.
Really? A fairy tale.
Oh, totally. I mean, it is a lie adults tell children just to get them to do their homework.
That's hilarious. But true, I guess.
Right. Because if human beings actually studied history to avoid past mistakes, our timeline wouldn't look like this repeating loop of identical disasters.
Right.
The brutal truth, and honestly why this chapter is so vital, is that we study history because almost every catastrophic mistake in the past is guaranteed to be made again by some despot or a tyrant or just some garden variety moron in the future.
That is perfectly said. The mistakes aren't going away. They're like baked into the human operating system.
Exactly. So you study the past to recognize those mistakes as they start forming in the present, so you can just step out of the way. And conversely, you study it to recognize positive trends so you can capitalize on them early.
You know, what fascinates me about that as a behavioral economist is that this ability, this pattern recognition, is deeply biologically hardwired into our brains. And the author gives this brilliantly relatable example. Imagine you walk into a room, right? And you see a wall plate with four light switches.
Okay.
Three of the switches are flipped up, and one is flipped down.
Oh man, you don't even have to think about it. Every single fiber of your being desperately wants to flip that fourth switch up.
Yes,
No.
you feel a literal neurological tension. And the author points out, like, that doesn't mean you have OCD. It just means you have a human visual cortex.
Yeah, we're built for it.
We are native pattern recognition machines. I mean, language is a structural pattern. Music, poetry, dance, all patterns. If you look around your physical environment right now, the specific weave of the cotton on your shirt, or the standardized order of the keys on your phone's keyboard,
Well, even in nature, right?
exactly, the branching fractal structure of a tree outside your window. We process and complete these microvisual patterns with absolutely zero effort.
But see, as a media literacy coach, here is where I see this massive disconnect, and I actually want to push this back to you.
Okay, go for it.
Why is it that our brains are incredibly brilliant at effortlessly completing a physical pattern, like a light switch, but as a society, we are completely dangerously blind to macro behavioral cycles? Like, why do we lose that intuition when we look at the economy or politics?
That is the million-dollar question. And it comes down to the chemical mechanics of the brain. When you look at a light switch, there's no emotional weight attached to it, right?
Sure.
Your visual cortex just does its job. But when you look at a macro cycle, say a booming stock market, your brain starts dumping dopamine. The euphoria of making money, or on the flip side, the sheer terror of losing it, it completely hijacks the prefrontal cortex.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The author illustrates this perfectly with a stock market graph example.
Oh, right. The 8-year-old kid test.
Yes. If you take an 8-year-old child who has zero concept of money and you show them a standard market chart that goes up, then down, then up again, and you ask them, hey, what comes next? What do they say?
I mean, they will almost uniformly point down. They naturally extrapolate that visual wave.
Precisely. That 8-year-old is displaying vastly more analytical wisdom than the adult talking head screaming on financial television networks.
That is so true.
The child's brain is just reading the pattern. But adult investors, they want the market to go up forever. So their hope, their greed, their recency bias, it all overrides the visual evidence. They actively convince themselves that the law of gravity has magically stopped applying to their specific portfolio.
They just let the emotion totally blind them to the cycle.
Yeah.
So if we know that our emotions naturally override our logical intuition, how do we objectively read the signs that a cycle is peaking or turning? Especially when the people holding the levers of power are actively hiding information from us.
Well, the author makes a brilliant observation here. Hidden information inherently produces highly predictable behavior. Whether it's a politician who secretly took a bribe on a Tuesday, or your boss who knows the company's about to be bought out, but they aren't legally permitted to tell the staff yet.
They might not say a single word about the secret, but their daily behavior fundamentally changes.
Exactly. It's like a poker player who peeks at pocket aces. You know, they might try to keep a straight face, but the way they place their chips, their breathing rate, their eye movements, and the tells are screaming at you.
You just have to know what to look for.
Right. If you observe how people hiding information in the past behaved, you know the exact behavioral tells to look for in the future.
And this scales up dramatically into massive historical and political pendulum swings. Just to impartially report the author's example from the text here, because, you know, we aren't discussing partisan politics. We are analyzing the mechanical physics of a cultural cycle.
Exactly. The political affiliation is entirely irrelevant here. It's the physics of the swing that matters.
Right. So the author notes that tracking these historical patterns allowed him to predict the rise of a strongman Republican candidate all the way back in 2009 during Obama's first year in office.
Wow, 2009.
Yeah. By looking at the cycle, he predicted Obama would win a landslide re-election, but that the sheer momentum of the political pendulum swinging so aggressively in one direction would absolutely prime the pump for a completely different archetype of Republican to follow.
Right, a counter-reaction.
Exactly. A disruptive figure who would get things done that a traditional polished politician simply couldn't.
And he called that in 2009. Because when you step back from the mosaic, what we were saying, you realize that the nightly news is just selling you anxiety.
Oh, absolutely. Once you see the structural framing of the media, the news actually becomes incredibly boring. You just stop falling for their endless cyclical claim that every single upcoming election is the most important election of our lifetime.
Oh, man, I have to interject there because as an economist, I see that exact same emotional contagion in financial markets. This time is different. Is literally the most expensive phrase in the English language.
Oh, I bet.
Let's look at the market peak tells the author highlights, because they are legendary. He called the massive silver crash in 2011 how. He wasn't running complex algorithmic models. He just started noticing "we buy silver" signs suddenly popping up at random gas stations and laundromats.
Which is the absolute zenith of a market cycle.
It is the ultimate contrarian indicator, and it has happened in every market for a century. The author brings up Joe Kennedy, JFK's father. Joe Kennedy famously exited the stock market right before the catastrophic crash of 1929.
Wait, why did he exit?
Because he was getting his shoes shined, and his shoeshine boys started giving him stock tips.
Oh, wow. Fast forward to the winter of 2017 and 2018, and the author saw the exact same script play out with cryptocurrency.
Oh, the crypto boom.
Yeah. For years, he had incredibly smart friends telling him that Bitcoin was a massive scam, calling it tulip mania. But suddenly, right at the absolute peak of the market frenzy, those exact same skeptical friends were frantically texting him, asking how they could buy in immediately.
The ultimate signal.
Right. So he publicly stated a bloodbath was coming, the herd told him he was crazy, and shortly after, the market completely collapsed.
Let me explain the mechanics of why that happens, behaviorally. When novices absolutely flood an asset, the media calls it mainstream adoption. But behaviorally, it is the peak of emotional contagion.
Right.
When the gas station owner and the shoeshine boy are pouring their life savings into an asset, the market has mathematically run out of greater fools. There is quite literally no one left to buy the asset and push the price higher.
The pool is empty.
Exactly. The cycle has exhausted its upward momentum and gravity takes over.
That is a fascinating way to frame it. But the author pushes this concept even deeper. This pendulum of human behavior isn't just an abstract economic or political theory. It is quite literally tied to the physical rotation of the Earth.
Which sounds esoteric, I know, but it governs everything we do.
It really does. I mean, the Earth rotates, generating the cycle of day and night. It revolves around the sun on a tilted axis, dictating the seasons. And as a society, we think we are these hyper-advanced, independent, modern consumers. But the data shows our purchasing habits map almost perfectly onto ancient agrarian rituals.
Let's break that down, because the author's take on modern retail seasons is incredible.
Okay, so in ancient times, nearly every human culture built their lives and survival rituals around the four major astronomical turning points: the spring and fall equinoxes, and the summer and winter solstices.
Right.
These dates dictated exactly when a society would plant crops, when they would try to conceive, and when they would offer sacrifices. We assume we've evolved past that, right?
Of course we do.
But the author argues, we've just allowed major retailers to rebrand those exact same astronomical rituals into sales events. Today, we call them spring cleaning, summer vacation, back to school, and the holidays.
We are literally just acting out ancient seasonal harvest scripts at the shopping mall.
Yes.
And the author points out the gym cycle as the quintessential modern example. We all know exactly what happens in January. On January 3rd, there are 10 guys who haven't exercised in 12 months completely hogging the Stairmasters.
Oh, the January rush.
Yeah. And by January 15th, you're down to 5 of them.
Yeah.
And by January 31st, maybe one fit guy actually stuck with it. It is a biological clock resetting every single year.
And look at the engineered transition from fall to winter. Around September 13th, the market just flips a switch. Suddenly, every single consumable product, lattes, cookies, beer, air fresheners, is violently injected with pumpkin spice.
Oh my gosh, it is a total sensory takeover.
It really is. But if you despise pumpkin spice, you don't even need to stress, because exactly 40 days later, the cycle shifts on a dime, and it is all magically replaced by peppermint mocha.
That's so true.
The retailers dictate the cycle, and the consumers blindly march along.
Retailers manufacture these seasonal environments specifically to extract your money. But, you know, as a media literacy coach, you know that the media uses the exact same cyclical psychology to manufacture an environment that extracts something much worse.
Exactly. They manufacture outrage cycles to extract your time. The media is incredibly sophisticated at designing these cyclical outrage loops to capture the public's attention and keep them entirely distracted from the actual systemic issues that people in power desperately want ignored.
The author uses the news cycle surrounding the old Civil War statues from a few years back as the ultimate case study in this. I'd love for you to analyze the structural framing of how the media built that cycle.
Oh, it is a classic lather, rinse, repeat engagement funnel. The TV networks would deliberately select two highly polarized individuals. The author lovingly refers to them as expert doorknobs and put them on screen together.
Expert doorknobs. I love that.
Right. So they adopt these solemn faces, pretend this is a matter of urgent national survival, and just start screaming at each other. This immediately triggers a downstream war of memes on Facebook. You literally had grown men fighting like children online over statues they had never actually seen in person.
And crucially, statues they hadn't spent a single second caring about just 2 weeks prior.
Exactly.
It's like walking into a casino where there are no clocks on the wall. The media designs the outrage cycle specifically to make you lose your sense of time and perspective. And when the author was asked for his opinion on the statues, his response totally broke the machine.
He just said, "I don't care."
Which is the most disruptive thing you could say to a herd.
It infuriated everyone. Both sides were angrier at him for refusing to participate in the outrage cycle than they were at their actual opponents. But he understood the mechanics of the cycle.
Right.
He knew that the outrage would eventually blow away like a fart in the wind. And impartially looking at the historical result, years later, over 800 of those statues still stand in public spaces. Nobody is talking about them. The news networks aren't covering them.
It's over.
The issue simply ceased to exist the second the media cycle moved on to the next manufactured crisis.
Which leads to the absolute golden rule of this chapter. The author explicitly states, if you did not care about a topic yesterday and you logically know you will not care about it in 2 weeks, do not let it distract you from being productive today.
That is so important.
Because time is a strict one-way trip on Earth. If you make a bad investment and lose money, you can grind and earn it back. If you lose a friend, you can go out and make new ones, but time cannot be recovered.
Never.
Every single minute you burn arguing online about the media's manufactured outrage of the week is completely permanently gone.
But let me challenge you on the practical application of this. As an expert in behavioral contagion, you know the immense social pressure involved. When everyone in your office and everyone on your feed is shouting about the current crisis, how do we practically, systematically step out of that herd?
That is exactly where the author introduces a concrete operational toolkit. He created the CYCLE method. It's an acronym designed to help you logically filter out the emotional noise and spot the real turns. Let's break down the psychology of each step.
Okay, so the first letter is C, confirm the pattern. When a situation feels incredibly urgent and unprecedented, you have to stop and ask, has this happened before? Because human behavior, markets, and political panics repeat constantly.
And behaviorally, our brains resist this step. We inherently want to feel special. You know, we want to believe that our current generation's crisis is totally unique. Confirming the pattern forces you to drop the ego and admit that we are just running an old script.
That makes a lot of sense. The next letter is why yesterday leaves clues. As the saying goes, history rarely repeats perfectly, but it constantly rhymes. If you want to know where a trend is heading next, you have to look backward at the previous cycle. Your map of the future is drawn in the past.
Then we hit the second C, crowd behavior. We discussed this with the market peaks. You have to actively observe the herd. If novices are wildly euphoric about an investment, the end is near. If the crowd is in a state of absolute apocalyptic panic, the bottom is close.
Crowds always exaggerate the extremes.
Always. But there is a massive biological comfort in joining a panicking herd. It feels safe to do what everyone else is doing, which is exactly why it's a trap.
Which brings us to L, look for the turn. Every cycle eventually exhausts itself and changes direction. Economic booms turn to busts. Media outrage burns incredibly hot and then completely evaporates.
Right.
Once you understand the pattern, you stop reacting emotionally to the current moment and start watching for the shift in momentum.
And finally, exit or enter early. You do not wait for the herd to give you permission. Once you see the turn coming, you act. But, you know, as an economist, I have to push back on the author here a little bit.
Huh. How so?
Well, mathematically, exiting a bull market early means you are leaving money on the table. Why does the author advocate stepping away before the mathematical peak?
Because trying to perfectly time the absolute top of a market is, in the author's words, like chasing a unicorn carrying a leprechaun with a pot of gold.
Okay. Fair enough.
It is a pure fantasy that usually ends in ruin. The author advocates a very specific discipline strategy. He focuses on sell-off plateaus, which are market tops, and accumulation troughs, which are market bottoms.
So how does that actually execute in a portfolio?
When you sense the cycle is nearing that plateau at the top, you don't panic sell everything, but you simply stop investing your regular weekly or monthly allocations into the asset. You hold that capital in cash reserves.
You essentially build dry powder.
Exactly. You wait for the inevitable correction down into the accumulation trough. And once that bottom is somewhat confirmed by the extreme fear in the crowd, you don't dump all your cash in on a single Tuesday.
You cost average it.
Right. You ease back in over a cycle of buys. For instance, if you built up $2,500 in cash during the plateau, you might systematically invest an extra $500 a month for 5 months. The author detailed the massive success of this exact strategy during a crypto winter in his past podcast, episode 3195, titled Stacking Sats Will Never Be This Easy Again.
Okay.
He identified the bottom of that cycle, noting that disciplined investors had plenty of time to accumulate assets while the herd was still paralyzed by fear.
And what I love about the CYCLE formula is that it isn't just a wealth preservation strategy. It is fundamentally a time and energy preservation strategy. By exiting or entering early, you completely bypass the emotional whiplash of the herd. You preserve your peace of mind.
Which ties this entire deep dive together perfectly. If we synthesize all the sources and examples we've analyzed today, the macro takeaways are undeniable.
History rhymes.
Crowds react emotionally to the present moment instead of logically to the larger cycle.
A sudden rush of novices signals a dangerous market peak, while extreme public fear signals a lucrative bottom.
And perhaps most critically, the media's outrage cycles are meticulously engineered to capture your attention and drain your unrecoverable time.
To help you permanently install these concepts, the author provides three specific mental code rewrites. We are going to recite these exactly as they are written in the text, so you can program them directly into your daily decision-making. Are you ready?
Ready. Computer, protect my time by ignoring outrage that will soon be forgotten.
Computer, when the herd runs one direction, check if the opportunity is the other way.
Computer, when I see a trend forming, check the past to see where the cycle usually goes next.
Those three directives alone can fundamentally alter how you navigate your life, your investments, and your attention. If you want to dig deeper into these principles and find more resources on designing a life independent of the herd, you absolutely need to visit jackslaws.com.
It really all comes down to recognizing the vast mosaic instead of getting trapped analyzing the individual chaotic tiles.
So we want to leave you with one final provocative thought to audit your own life today. Take a hard look at your personal calendar, your bank statements, and your social media feeds over the last 30 days.
Yeah, look closely.
Look at the specific things you purchased, the online arguments that spiked your blood pressure, the seasonal stress you felt. Were any of those moments actually the result of your own independent conscious design? Or were you just unknowingly playing out a perfectly predictable phase in someone else's manufactured cycle?
That is a deeply uncomfortable but entirely necessary question to ask.
It is the only way to break the loop. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Remember, you can find the complete framework and more resources over jackslaws.com. Step back, look at the past, and spot the cycle.